The battle flares again over this area's monuments to the old Confederacy. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or through our app. Just ahead, a preview of this weekend's Take 'em Down Jacks rally in downtown Heming Park. What do you think about this controversy? Give us a call. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, a look at the shockingly high cost of healthcare in this country through one story and one local man's fight to live, literally to live, as he struggles to pay for life-saving care and one operation. Plus, the lively step dancers stomping into the Florida Theater this weekend for Stomptown. We'll tell you about that, too. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, we've got the latest on this city's fight over its Confederate monuments. Last summer, in the wake of violence at a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, that left one woman dead, Jacksonville and other cities around the country began considering if they should finally take down monuments and statues commemorating the Confederacy. Now, that violence in Charlottesville came about because Charlottesville was taking down a statue dedicated to Confederate General Robert E. Lee. It's been a hot topic in this area, of course. City Council President Anna Brochet has ordered an inventory of Confederate monuments in public spaces, but exactly what's to be done with them after that inventory is completed is still very much an open question and a matter of fierce debate. Meanwhile, down in St. Augustine, the city manager there is recommending seven people should sit on a newly created Confederate Memorial Contextualization Advisory Committee for that city. In other words, the nation's oldest city won't remove their monument, but will look at providing historical context around the display that they have. Now, the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, a local group, has been on the leading edge of rallying to remove the monuments in Jacksonville. They and other groups are holding a Take 'em Down Jacks rally this Sunday afternoon in Heming Park. Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition and Wells Todd of the Progressive Coalition of Jacks join us now in studio with more about the controversy over Confederate monuments in Jacksonville and in cities around the country. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much, Ms. Ross, for having us here this morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about Jacksonville's Confederate monuments? Should they stay? Should they go? Should they be placed in a museum? Should they be contextualized as they're being done in St. Augustine? What is your opinion? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Let us know your thoughts on Facebook as well, where we are already getting your comments. All right, Ben Frazier, let's begin with you.
Yes, ma'am.
You've been very vocal about this for some time. And so there will be another rally this weekend in Heming Park, where, of course, there's a statue to a Confederate war general, one of several monuments to the Confederacy around this area. This has sort of been on pause for a while since Council President Brochet called for an inventory. Is your effort to try to force the issue to the forefront again, to sort of get the debate going again?
Well, we certainly want to be able to rekindle the overarching argument, which is a dialogue about race here in Jacksonville. That's what this is really all about. Now, we recognize that when it comes down to the issue of racism in the monument, that there is, in fact, an ominous and odious connection between the monuments and the history of white supremacy and racial hatred. Why? Because the monuments themselves were put up as explicit symbols of white supremacy.
And that is something that, of course, has been the matter of division, let's say, between those that oppose the monument's removal and those that support it for not just the last few months, but for the last 100-plus years. Wells Todd, those that hold differing narratives about the cause of the Civil War, which is really quite striking, I must say, to consider the fact that Americans can hold such incredibly different sets of beliefs about why the Civil War occurred in the first place.
Yes, I think it begins in our institution of learning. We take some schools here in Jacksonville when they teach about the Civil War. They do not include the real reason for it. They do not talk about slavery. They talk about states' rights. They talk about Northern aggression. And it goes on from there. And so there are a lot of people who are opposed to taking these statues down, but don't really know all the facts. And when you don't know all the facts, you'll fall for whatever somebody tells you is a fact.
When you say people don't know all the facts, be specific if you could. Well, for example.
The majority of these statues were not put up directly after the Civil War.
That's right.
They started going up around the civil rights struggle. And they went up actually starting with segregation.
Didn't they first start going up at the beginning of the 20th century when the Daughters of the Confederacy in particular sought to romanticize the narrative of the lost cause of the Confederacy and romanticize their husbands, their fathers, the war dead, and romanticize the reason the war was fought and sanitize, frankly, the reason that it was fought.
Exactly.
That's correct. What happened was these statues were all a part of a campaign to paint the Southern cause in the Civil War as being just and slavery as being some type of benevolent or well-meaning or humanitarian institution. We know it was not. These statues went up. Their installation came against a backdrop of Jim Crow violence and the oppression of Black Americans. While these statues were being put up by the Daughters of the Confederacy, it was the most anti-virulent time in American history. Black folks were being beaten, their homes were being burned down, they were beaten in the streets, and Ida B. Wells, the African-American journalist, in her book, The Red Record, notes that in 1 year, 1893 alone, she documents 186 lynchings of Black people, mostly men, but also including women and children. In Florida, between 1882 and 1930, there were 250 lynchings of Black people. So then we understand that in America, you can support whatever you want to support. But if you support these statues, you need to understand you're also supporting slavery, the humiliation, the degradation of Black families. We feel pain when we see these statutes. You may as well understand it. We don't like it. We're mad as hell. We want them to go.
What would you say to the effort in St. Augustine, Wells Todd? Not that they are not removing the Confederate monument that they have in their historic area, but they are putting together a committee to contextualize the monument and provide historical context to explain to people that walk by the times that were swirling around that monument at the time that it was constructed. Your response to that effort?
Well, I really have a problem with this contextualizing situation. What are they actually going to say? In the slave market in St. Augustine, where there is a Confederate statue, are they going to talk about the millions of Africans that died in the Middle Passage? Are they going to talk about those that were forced into slavery? Are they going to talk about the whippings, the beatings, the lynchings, the rapes? What are they actually going to say in contextualizing Southern heritage?
That's right.
The cause here, and we will continue to fight this for as long as it takes, is to get these racist monuments down. There is no contextualization. What has to be done is the city and city fathers and mothers or whatever need to understand that African Americans have been disrespected long enough with these statues being up.
That's right. As a part of their lies and a part of the mythology being told in St. Augustine and in Jacksonville is that this is really about history. So then consider, if you will, what do we learn from the history of these monuments? Are they truly innocuous symbols of Confederate heritage, as their defenders argue? I say no. These statues are symbols of racism, black oppression, hatred, and pain.
Let me go to some calls, and then we'll continue with both of you. Lots of callers. Your opinion, everybody, on the Confederate monuments, as activists plan to rally on this issue on Sunday in Heming Park. Where do you stand on this issue? 549-2937. Johnny in Washington Heights. Hi, Johnny. Go ahead.
Hi. To contextualize the Southern heritage and the way they look at the Civil War, they consider it as the war of Northern aggression. And I'm going to preface my comment because taking away the nefarious aspects of it, what country has allowed the loser of a war to continue to betray their symbols of nationalism? It's pretty much the same thing as erecting Hitler's statue in post-war Germany.
There you go.
And that is my comment. I'll take it off the air.
Okay, thanks for that. And he makes a valid point in the sense that after the war, in the interest of binding up the wounds of the nation, national unity, the South was allowed to romanticize its narrative. And so that is something that's been brought up again and again as we talk about this.
Yeah, they make it sound like the Africans that were brought here and the over 200 years of slavery was something that they didn't mind going through. It was something that was beneficial to them. I'd like to say that at this point in the United States, there are over 17 states that are removing these statues. And I'd like to say, Mayor Curry, step forward and demand that these statues be moved.
Now, that brings me to another question for both of you. Here's a comment on our Facebook page from A.G. Gankarski, writer at Florida Politics, a guy who basically lives at City Hall, all right?
Right.
And he writes, the first step is to get a bill introduced in City Council and through committees. There is a state bill that Jay Fant is carrying. He's running for Attorney General, lives in Jacksonville. It would make it illegal to remove or alter these monuments. My suggestion to the activists would be to find someone to sponsor a bill and ensure it is fast-tracked through the council. The time to move would have been 2017, between legislative sessions. So it's imperative that they make their first priority getting a bill through council. You're trying to rally public opinion to your side, but what about the inside game? Rallying the power players, the legislators,
I think
the policymakers.
There's full agreement on at least my perspective on what AG is saying. But understand that there is, in fact, another side. There are arguments going on behind closed doors not to allow these things to happen. We have an administration.
Do you have someone on council who can sponsor a bill for you?
We are moving towards pushing for legislation. We believe it is the answer. We feel it is the most prudent way to resolve the issue, to enact legislation directing that specific Confederate monument be removed. It should also direct that the monument be relocated to a museum where proper, whatever, contextualization.
Can you tell us who that council person is?
We are not going to disclose that information because people have to go through, as Anna Brochet will tell you, you can get punished for standing up. What we need is somebody who is brave enough to stand up for the removal. We recognize that this is an issue that is divided along partisan lines.
When City Council President Anna Brochet called for an inventory of the monuments, she certainly did face significant pushback on that.
Precisely.
She did. She did. She also faced pushback on Walking While Black.
And
she made
that's the Times Union investigation into the allegations that the police issued disproportionate numbers of pedestrian tickets to African Americans. She indicated she'd support a temporary moratorium on those tickets. So did the public defender, and then she sort of walked that back. She said she needed more information.
What we're saying is, listen, let's not be naive about this. This is a hot political issue. White voters overwhelmingly oppose removing these statutes. We recognize that. We also recognize that roughly 47% of black voters strongly support removing them. So the issue drives a similarly divisive dynamic along party lines, with Democrats overwhelmingly in favor, Republicans opposed. So this is about getting our story out there. So we want to be clear that while you may support leaving the statutes where they are, we want you to understand what you're supporting. You're supporting racism. You're supporting racial division.
And they're also supporting the standing question about equality, about whether or not African Americans are equal to whites. And that brings in the white supremacist piece to this whole thing.
Let's go to some more calls on this issue. The lines are certainly jammed up. Linnell is in Mandarin. Hey, Linnell, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hey, I just want to add a couple things to this. So this is not a dead issue. This has not been a dead issue for the past year. Take 'em Down Jacksonville has done a great job going out in our community, and they've held public awareness events. They've invited historic authors to come in and do some educational events for the public to attend. They've done petition gathering. They've done public viewings of documentaries about the timeline of when these statues went up across the South, especially. So they've done a great job going out and doing public engagement and public awareness. But I also want to say, I'm a veteran myself. I've spent over half of my life in service to our nation and worn the uniform of our nation. I'm also the descendant of Confederate and Union soldiers. And I have to tell you, it gets old watching people use my dead ancestors as symbols of hatred to continue to divide our community. And as far as contextualization goes, I grew up in Northwest Florida and attended public school, and I heard that hypocrisy about the Northern aggression. So if you want to talk about contextualization, the hand that has held the pen that writes history in our nation has been held by the white hand. And we have contextualized, romanticized slavery and the oppression of other people for far too long. We need to find ways to bring our community together. And having those icons and statues to hatred and division is definitely not the way to do it. So I definitely support Take 'em Down. I definitely support a way to bring our community together. And I just don't think it's by supporting these stones and statues.
Linnell, thanks for that call. Thank you, Linnell. All right, let's go to John. He's on I-95. John, how are you? Go ahead, John.
Hi. Yeah, traveling through. I'm enjoying the discussion. Former history teacher, just a quick comment. I'm a Yankee, descendant of Yankees. Great-grandfather fought for the North. Grew up out west in totally multicultural context. I've always believed in full racial equality. And opposed to racial inequality or wrong teachings. But a lot of people are not aware the U.S. Congress years ago voted that all Confederate soldiers were elevated to the status of an American soldier in this century. It's a federal law that all Confederate soldiers are to be considered the same honor of a serviceman or servicewoman in any branch of the American military, and desecration of the statue to an American soldier is a federal crime. Now, so a lot of the history of this, I'm not talking about justifying slavery or justifying bigotry. That's not the issue. But for the most of the time, since mostly the 1920s when these statues started going up, very, very few African Americans ever complained. This is a very, very modern, recent gripe of people seeing these statues as symbols of racial hatred.
That's not true.
And Yes, that is true. I have many black friends. None of them griped until within the last 10 years.
You have black friends.
But John, maybe they didn't feel confident enough to speak out publicly.
Thank
maybe
you,
they
Melissa.
Were afraid.
Why don't you ask for a call-in from people and ask when it was they started being offended by the statues?
When they went up, when they started going up, do you not think a black person would be offended?
John, I appreciate the call.
By a statue of Robert E. Lee?
John, I so appreciate the call. Thank you, John. Okay.
I'd like to say one last thing.
Wait. I want to just make the point that on the one hand, we took a call from Linnell, the descendant of Confederate soldiers, who said she doesn't want her ancestors used to foment hate and division, and she supports these monuments being removed. Then we take a call from a Yankee who says he doesn't support the removal because it desecrates soldiers, even though he feels they fought for the wrong side. If that doesn't sum up this country,
division,
I don't know what does.
Now, all of that
said, I do disagree with John, and I think you're absolutely right, Wells, in that black folks have hated these monuments since the day they went up. They just perhaps didn't feel that they could openly protest them because they could get lynched.
Exactly.
You know, so
they were lynched.
Exactly. So, I know you both have a lot more to say, but let's take a few more calls. Stephanie is along Hodges Boulevard. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi. Two comments. Firstly, I haven't seen any statues in honor of General Cornwallis up in New England. So if it was really about history and historical prompting and education, there would be that up in New England. You'd see stuff from the Revolutionary War to the, commemorating the other side.
That's right.
And secondly, I have to say, as much as I like A.G. and his comments, I think he's so off in his reply to you that the black population of Jacksonville should play nice and go through the council and be behave, not make a mess, not make a fuss, not be loud.
Well, I don't think he's saying that so much as he's saying get legislation. I mean, I don't think he's saying, I think he's just advising to get legislation passed. That's all.
And I'm okay with that.
But I appreciate your opinion, Stephanie.
Yeah, it just sounded to me like he was saying, don't show up in the park. Don't gather a crowd. Don't make it quote unquote ugly. Legislation is lovely if you have legislators. Public opinion in this world gets stuff done.
Yeah, sure. No, thank you, Stephanie. And when it comes to this issue, here's another one: the human rights ordinance. Those activists did both.
They
did the public opinion piece and they did the legislative piece.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964 did not pass overnight. It took people being beaten in Birmingham, shot down with fire hoses, bitten by dogs, beaten as they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, and beaten out of the beach water in St. Augustine before it was passed. This is not an easy thing. We've got to convince at least 10 people on that council, A.G., to vote our way. And quite frankly speaking, right now, it probably would not happen.
And I'm being told by researchers here in the newsroom that the previous gentleman that called about Confederate soldiers being considered U.S. soldiers, that refers to burial, not necessarily being honored in the form of monuments.
Exactly.
Just clarifying that.
I'd like to say from 1882 to 1930, there were 250 lynchings in Florida. Florida was called the lynching capital.
The lynching capital.
And for the gentleman who said there was a federal law put into effect, we have to talk about racism and white supremacy. It goes right to the White House. It goes to the Senate. It goes throughout the government. And it's not surprising that they would pass a law to bury Confederate soldiers. I think when a president would allow the birth of a nation to be shown at the White House, it just goes to point up how deep white supremacy is in this country. And we know we have a president right now who espouses white supremacy.
I'm going to read a few tweets. There are so many tweets coming in to the show over this issue of Confederate monuments. Just a few for our listeners. Brian tweets us, Jacksonville had a number of black veterans who fought for the Union during the Civil War. We should be more curious about why the city didn't leave any marks of gratitude for their service. Here's one. The monument also survived the Great Fire. I think they're talking about the monument in Hemming Park.
That's correct.
As the fire spread, the surrounding residents stacked personal items around its base, hoping the fire would miss the open space. It was a bad plan. The base got so hot, it was reportedly glowing red. So apparently, I'll check that, but apparently they were just concerned that it would burn down.
Right.
So they were trying to save it.
I don't know which monument it was. It could have been the
another
one
example,
Confederate Park.
Here's another tweet. Another example is Confederate Park, named for the 1914 reunion of Confederate veterans who camped on site. They commissioned a statue, Mothers of the Southland, which still stands. And that statue was vandalized, of course, recently. And Jay Fance bill would make it a felony to vandalize these statues. Another tweet. Historian Peter Novick says that white historians of the North and South reached an understanding. Northern WASPs, surrounded by newly arrived Jews and Catholics, were willing to accept how Southern aristocrats viewed the Civil War and blacks in a sort of truce between the two groups. Juliet tweets the show, Hemming Park is a key public space defining downtown and our cities. I don't think a Civil War soldier is the best representation of our city. I believe we can present something now that sends a better message to citizens and visitors.
Well,
Jim tweets the show, we already have precedent here. The Duval County School Board voted to change the name of Nathan Bedford Forrest High School to West Side.
That's right.
Hi. All right. Yes. So lots of tweets. And AG tweets the show, AG Gankarski. The caller did misrepresent my position. If state law preempts removal, then it can't happen legally. Activists must ensure that a bill is filed and passed. Otherwise, home rule will be abrogated on this issue, as the state attempts to do on so many others. All right. And I do appreciate everyone's calls, everyone's opinions on this. We want it to make sure everyone is heard and expresses themselves. Herman on the South Side. Go ahead, Herman. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for all that you do in facilitating these types of discussions.
You're welcome.
And to the group sitting there with you, there's a biblical synopsis that says before you go to war, count up the cost. And then counting up that cost, and I think responsible activism, have you all looked at even protecting the career at Anna Brochet, who has, I guess for the first time ever, anointed five African Americans to the Finance Committee, and again walked out on the ledge to facilitate discussion with you guys. So are you also looking at protecting the people who are in this fight with you, namely Anna Brochet and the lady that you're sitting there with at this moment?
Absolutely.
Have a nice
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. I think we need to look back at the civil rights movement. It took riots in the street. It took children filling up jails in the South. It took lynchings, murders, and in other respects. We have to understand, President Johnson at the time, President Johnson told Dr. King, go out there and move. Go out there and make this happen.
Yes.
And that's what has to happen. We have to build that force in Jacksonville.
Derek along Normandy Boulevard. Go ahead, Derek. You're on the air. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Oh, just on a more lighthearted note, I just wanted to say that I believe it's Mr. Benjamin Fraser. I just want to say that he has the most majestic, awesome, badass voice.
Well, that's well known. Oh, yes. I mean, you know James
Thanks.
Earl Jones? You know James Earl Jones,
oh, yeah.
Derek?
Oh, yeah.
He's a piker.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, he's got nothing on Ben. Everybody knows that.
Thanks
for that call, Derek. Yeah.
So these
you know, CNN really, CNN should give you a call.
No, I appreciate that. I just want to say that
CNN.
What we need to push for right now is the removal and relocation of these statues. We need to be talking about who's going to pay the cost. Can we get Shotgun to pay to get these things removed? Why? Because well, what's wait, happening
let me just jump in. What about the other idea that's been floated, that what's these that? Monuments should be put in a museum?
I'm all for it. Let them put them anywhere. Somebody's backyard. I don't care. But take them from off of public property. They should not be in our parks held in positions of honor.
Let's go to Craig in Palatka. Hi, Craig. What do you think?
Hi. Well, one of your guests made a comment that Florida was supposedly the lynching capital. And there is a website called lynchinginamerica.eji.org, which is a site trying to bring out about the history of lynching. And the fact of the matter is that Florida had 313 lynchings, which is behind Georgia with 590, behind Mississippi with 654, behind Louisiana with 549. My point is that we should not be distorting these kind of events for our own political
gain. The only thing
one
that's being
lynching
distorted
would be one too many.
One yeah. too many.
You know what?
The bottom
no,
line
no,
is
let him finish.
Great
let him finish.
Injustice when that happened. But let's remember this: every single one of those lynchings happened because a Democrat sheriff denied his oath to protect and defend the citizens.
Well, Craig, I appreciate that, but the Democratic Party basically flipped in 1964, beginning in 1964, when Lyndon Johnson enacted the Civil Rights Movement and then later the Voting Rights Movement, and then Democrats started switching their allegiance in the South over to the Republican Party, culminating with President Richard Nixon's Southern strategy, which appealed to Southern working class whites and appealed to racial prejudices in the South. And, you know, and then Ronald Reagan in 1980 came down to Mississippi and gave a speech about welfare queens. I mean, that's really not a valid argument. So that's really not a valid
remember
argument.
Remember this, the Civil Rights Voting Act passed, not because of the number of Democrats that voted for it, passed because of the number of Republicans.
That's
because
right. Moderate Republicans in the Northeast.
Voted against it.
That's right.
It
moderate
passed.
Republicans in the Northeast voted for the Civil Rights Act, and moderate Republicans in the Northeast are basically almost an extinct species today, because we've seen,
you know,
Craig,
is,
almost a complete...
This is a ridiculous argument.
Yeah, I mean, but
it
you know what?
Yeah,
we really are getting off topic. But you know what, Craig? You're right about the fact that Florida was not the lynching capital, and I appreciate that call because I checked.
No, no.
Florida, according to what I'm seeing, guys, Florida was ranked third.
No, ma'am, that is
behind
the raw number.
Alabama and Arkansas.
Ms. Ross, that is the raw number. And what we're talking about is per capita per 100,000.
Okay.
Check the record.
But I take your point that Florida certainly was lynching a lot of people. So whether it was first, third, or fifth, people of color in this state were terrorized. And so that's the larger issue, certainly. And getting back to why we had you gentlemen on the show to begin with,
yes,
there
ma'am.
Will be a rally Sunday, 2 o'clock in Heming Park, and we thank you both for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
We're out of time. I know you wanted to do a spoken word essay,
unfortunately,
we're out of time.
Well, that's okay.
Ben Frazier, Wells Todd, thank you for being here.
Take them down.
Thank you.
All righty. Much more still ahead later. Stomp Down is coming to the Florida Theater. We'll tell you all about that. But up next, as the debate rages over the cost of health care, we'll take you inside one local man's desperate fight to pay for care that could save his life. That's after this.
A lot of things can happen when the lights go out.
They allowed these women for years to be abused.
For janitors, working the night shift is dangerous, even in the era of Me Too.
They need to take extra steps. They can't just wait until the next rape happens.
On the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
And a guy came up on a bike behind me and tried to grab my phone. And so we started wrestling. I got my phone back. And I thought, okay, that's it. That's the end of this. But it wasn't.
Lessons from a mugging and other true stories in a live show from Dublin, Ireland. Next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Fred Hirsch, the poet pianist, and his piece dealing with the poetry of Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass.
Or sometimes when I meet people and they say, that Whitman album helped me get through a really terrible time in my life. And I'd like to think that it's, you know, humbly because of the music, but it's also the words.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Dave Barry, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And you've spent many years defending your homeland, Florida, to much hilarity. Now you've compiled all of it in this book, and it's, I think, by turns hilarious and excruciating for Florida residents to read. But it must have been fun for you to write this and put this together. How did you draw upon the source material? Because, of course, there's no shortage of material.
Yeah, well, I started I live in Miami. I've been here 30 years, and for a long time, Miami was kind of the joke, but not so much Florida. And I was sort of used to defending Miami, even though pretty much every bad thing anybody ever says about Miami is true. And I even had bumper stickers put up once that said, "Come back to Miami. We weren't shooting at you." With the 2000 election, the whole state of Florida sort of became the butt of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
We were unable to figure out who we'd voted for. I don't know if you remember that night, but...
Yeah, oh yeah, I was here.
Gore was leading, and Bush was leading, and for a little while, William Shatner was in the lead. You know, we had no idea whom we'd voted for. So Florida sort of became the joke state that... From then on, really, and then this whole Florida man thing on the internet.
Yeah.
So I decided to write a book defending the state and pointing out that a lot of yes, there's a lot of weirdness here and a lot of insane people, a lot of stupid people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, they're not from here. I mean, a lot of people aren't from Florida. They come down here to commit weird acts in Walmarts and whatever. So the part of the book is that, and then part of it is a kind of a love letter to the state. I traveled around to a bunch of places, some of them pretty obscure, some of them kind of old Florida tourist attractions,
mm-hmm.
but things that were really just purely Florida places and that you wouldn't find somewhere in the other state, and wrote about them. And a lot of the book is that.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about everything from the skunk ape to the Weeki Wachee mermaids and obviously Disney World, but some other attractions, too, that are just so kitschy and strange that you would only find here.
Yes. And I'm talking about strange, one of the stranger ones, I went to a town called Casadega, which is north central Florida, and... it is one of the creepiest, weirdest places I've ever been to in my life.
Did you get a reading? I got a psychic reading there once.
It's a spiritual, they call themselves the spiritual capital of the world. Everybody there is a psychic or a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed at the Casadega Hotel. This was right before Halloween, which is a kind of a especially creepy time there, and went up the street and had a reading gun, and it was a bizarre experience, partly because the woman kept looking behind me. The woman, she was a medium, she said, you know, she was in touch with the dead, and you know, we'd be sitting here in this kind of darkened living room with candles burning and New Age music playing in the background, and she'd go, "Oh, I see. Thank you." And I go, "What?" She goes, "Oh, I wasn't talking to you."
So she was talking to someone who came through for you.
Somebody, yeah. Except that whoever it was didn't really know very much about me.
Aww.
I had a lot of trouble finding any spirits who had any real connection with me. I also got a reading done for my dog, Lucy.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have my dog with me, but they can do a reading with... They get your dog's aura from a photograph. So I have a picture of Lucy on my phone, and they took a picture of my picture and then put it through this printer that made this, like, rainbow pattern, which they told me was Lucy's aura. And I didn't know Lucy had an aura. Lucy has a smell sometimes, but I never know.
Okay, so Cassidy...
And they did this reading with Lucy, where and they said that my mother, who was deceased, came and played with Lucy every night. Which struck me as pretty funny if you knew my mom, that she would, you know, visit Florida for that purpose. But anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a little bit about our corner of the state, North Florida, which is very different from Miami.
Yeah, you're really more like the South than the North, aren't you?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
I mean, you're north of Florida, way north of us, but down here, we have like... Well, I live in Miami, which is basically Latin America. I mean, my joke is I moved here in 1986 from the United States. But then a little north of us, Fort Lauderdale, especially Boca, that area, it's, you know, everybody's from New York.
Right.
New Jersey, Long Island. And then if you go west over to Naples, everybody's from Ohio or Michigan. But when you get up toward you guys, it's the real South back up that way.
And what do you think that says about Florida?
Well, it's just that we're not one state. That is always, I think, as long as I've been here, been true. Floridians, I guess there are some older, you know, folks born and raised and whatever, who view themselves primarily as Floridians. But down here, especially, and I think much of the state, Orlando, a lot of the fast-growing areas, people live in Florida, but they don't identify as Floridians the way people from like Missouri identify as Missourians, or from Indiana identify as Indianans. I think in Florida, it's like we're here. It's a weird place. It's warm. The weather's nice sometimes, but there's a lot of strange people here, and I'm still sort of connected with where I came from.
Right. So. Yeah, there are definitely more people up here who have that sort of native Floridian identification.
Right, right. And it may be why the two ends of the state do not get along all that well. I mean, you know, politically and I guess maybe culturally, it's just like, I know that when we, from the way deep South Florida, drive all the way up there, you know, we feel like we're in a whole different world. And then, you know, for one thing, you folks are nice and polite.
That's Dave Barry. In a moment, Stomp Down stomps its way into the Florida Theater this weekend. Right after this, you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
When farm workers take on fast food giants, who wins? In Florida, the coalition of Immokalee workers proved that courage and creativity can make a real difference. They turned one of the nation's worst work environments, a kind of modern-day slavery, into one of the best. How they did it. Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, how the leadership of the Trump administration's Department of Health and Human Services came to be largely composed of anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQ activists, and how that's affecting policy. We talk with Dan Diamond, who covers HHS for Politico. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Immigration officials say we ought to expect more big raids this year. Immigrant advocates are gearing up.
You know, the most important rule, and if I could say this 1,000 times in one conversation, I will, is that you have the right to remain silent.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Workplace Rights for Undocumented Workers, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a national touring step show that brings together youth and college teams from across the country to display their incredible dancing and step skills. Take a listen.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Stomp Down takes the stage Saturday night at the Florida Theater. Assistant Director Sharika Cunningham is here now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you could hear a little bit from that audio how high energy these shows are, but you really have to see it to believe it. It's
yes.
So cool.
Yes, it is. It is. It's extreme high energy. And you guys will see that this Saturday at the Florida Theater.
Yeah.
Yes, we have so many amazing teams coming, and the excitement, the energy level, everything will be just extreme. You'll see that.
Now,
there are styles of stepping and all of that. So
let's explain what stepping is for people that have never seen a step show.
Okay. Well, stepping is a rhythmic movement that includes the hand and feet. Okay. And stepping is a part of an African heritage originally created through gumboot stepping. And over time, it was adopted by University Greeks. So you have your Divine Nine sororities and fraternities. And then, of course, your non-Divine Nine, which are your business sororities and fraternities. And then, of course, your independent step teams.
Yeah. And it is super competitive.
It is. It is. Yes. You will see that they put our youth in, as well as our Greeks, put so much effort and time and to their performances. I'm telling you, it's a treat you don't want to miss.
And the level of skill, that the choreography is so intricate, you know.
It is.
That goes into the performances. And it's so entertaining, too.
It is. It is.
You know,
is.
It's
yes.
exciting to watch.
It is. It's very exciting. Very exciting. So, and, you know, the interesting part is that there's some of the teams have incorporated stunts and different creative movements. And you will see that. It's great. It's a great show.
Now, Stomp Down has high school teams, as you said, college teams from college fraternities, sororities, and independent teams. How did all of them come together for this?
Well, Mr. Duane Ballinger, he's actually the founder of Stomp Down. And he actually started stepping in high school. And then, of course, mm-hmm. of course, that went along into his college, you know, career as well. And then into his professional career. But he, at the time, it was just more so community, you know, step teams, basically. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he became Greek. And then he started, he's a part of, he's a Kappa. And so he started stepping with that fraternity. And over time, once he started creating step teams, it was kind of like, you know what? I want to do step shows. But instead of just focusing on on Divine Nine Greeks and non-Divine Nine Greeks, I'm going to, you know, compile, you know, independent step teams, because believe it or not, there's a lot of step teams across the nation that's not affiliated with any university or college.
People just do it for the love of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for youth, it's a positive outlet. It's they can channel all of that energy into something positive, and it showcases their talent. Yeah. And, you know, it's a great thing.
And there's even a scholarship element involved in this too,
yes,
isn't there?
Yes, there is. There is a scholarship element. We're big on education. We wanted to incorporate that element into the Stomp Down as well. So one of the lucky, you know, students in the audience will definitely go home with a scholarship. And that's going to be a really good thing.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, it's Stomp Down. Get your tickets for the big show Saturday night at the Florida Theater. She's assistant director Sharika Cunningham. So you're directing this whole production.
Yes, I'm assisting.
You're assisting.
Exactly. I am the assistant director, but Mr. Ballinger is the man. So, you know, this major production, we're touring with it. We're taking it across the country. And it's been a journey. It's been an amazing opportunity to be a part of. And we're super excited.
Well, have a good time. Thanks for being with
us. No problem. Thank you.
All right. Stomp Down Saturday night at the Florida Theater. And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour, and our show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. Never miss a show. Download our app to listen anytime. The podcast is on iTunes and Stitcher, and our rebroadcast is tonight at 8. Next on 1A, the abuse scandal at USA Gymnastics. What went wrong? And can we be sure the scale of such abuse will never happen again? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.